This is The Spark. I'm Martha Woodruff. The adventurous Dr. Lee Yoder has just left the country to begin his second year as head of school at the American School of Vietnam in Ho Chi Minh City. Dr. Yoder had spent over two decades as a college professor and administrator, first at Eastern Mennonite University and then at Bridgewater College, when, in 1999, sort of perhaps retired, he got this email from a consultant in New York.
He says, "What about Egypt?" I says, "I don't know. What about Egypt?" I met him in Washington, D.C. at Union Station. And then I went with him to Boston to the Search Associates recruitment fair. After Boston, they arranged for me to go to Cairo for a week to meet the owners. And they paid me for a week. And I met with parents, and they wanted me to tell them what an American school would be like. I signed a contract. Started on August 1, 2000.
Had you started a school before?
No. I've been in school work all my life since 1963, but I never started a school, no.
And you'd never been to Egypt?
I had never been to Egypt, no.
What in you was attracted to the idea of doing something you had never done before in a place you'd never been?
Well, I always like to experiment, innovate, sense of adventure, all of those kinds of things. It's always intriguing. I'd like to do something that will stand on its own merits, and be helpful and be productive.
You arrived there in 2000. Was there a building? Was there?
Was a building, and it was a very hot day. It was like the sun coming at your face, like coming out of an oven when we left the airport. I worked for Mr. Mohammed Rashidi and his eight daughters. They were all living in the same building along the Nile, but ranked by age from top to bottom. Of course, Mr. Muhammad had the top flat. And it was his youngest daughter, Mrs. Jihan Rashidi, with whom I worked directly.
Who lived in the bottom, the ground floor.
Because she had this vision to do an American school, as did Mr. Muhammad. These other sisters all operated schools for their father, Egyptian national schools, English speaking, but national controlled and operated.
When they said, "We want you to start an American school," what were they talking about?
Well, the American school is in sharp contrast to the Egyptian national schools. See, the Egyptian national schools follow more a British model, which is rote memorization, big exam at the end. And so it doesn't matter whether you go to school, it doesn't matter what the teacher says, you just pass the exam at the end. The American school, in contrast, is an emphasis on critical thinking, investigation, inquiry, problem solving, writing, and research. It's a different way of learning, as I called it there, and still believe that's a good description, because it's learning what you know, what you can learn, what you can discover, and then apply to other situations later.
I have to ask you, have the SOL, Standard of Learning Exams, that we hear so much about?
Well, you would be interested to know that I took the SOLs from Virginia with me to Cairo. I used them as a framework for the development of our curriculum.
Okay. You get there. You got a corner of a building. You got 20 students. You got Virginia's SOLs.
Right. And I'm asked to teach English and the social studies about a week or two before the school started. Because first when I got there, they said school wasn't going to start after all. But there would be plenty to do. 2 weeks later, they said, "No, we are going to start after all." And we had 20 students, but five of them were grandchildren of Mr. Muhammad. And that's why we started at grades 9 and 10. The wrong place to start. One should start at the lower levels.
Okay. You're there.
I'm there.
With your 20 students starting at the wrong place.
Right.
And how'd it go?
And I said, "Well, I guess we need some books." So I just said, "Oh, let's see, the books, Harcourt, Holt, Reinhardt, Winston, these are the companies of the past." And so I got books. I got a world geography book. I soon learned that all the books had to be approved by the Minister of Education.
For Egypt.
For Egypt. And so one of the other sisters, Mrs. Munira, she took care of the legal stuff. So she took the books to the minister and came back and said, "The minister said these books are not improved." I says, "What do you mean?" Well, the geography book, the southern border of Egypt with Sudan is not accurately reflected in the book, and the Palestine-Israeli issue is not evenly balanced in this textbook. I says, what do you mean then? We can't use them? Well, no, she says, I will go back and talk to the minister again for another solution. She came back and said, the one solution is to simply tear out the pages from the book where these errors from their point of view are located. I thought, my Western reasoning, that if I had 20 students, 20 books, I'd tear out 20 pages. She says, no, 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 no. You just tear out the pages of the one book that goes to the minister. Keep on using the book as it is. So that was an early lesson in terms of cross-cultural procedures, approvals, manipulations, call it what you will.
You know, I expected many things of this interview, but I didn't expect to laugh a lot.
Yes, well, you never know, because when you're going to teach in an international setting, you have to have a sense of adventure. You have to expect challenge. And you need a sense of humor. That's the only way you make it.
Okay. After presenting the minister with his edited copy,
yes, right.
Crudely edited copy, and you got your 20 students, including the 5 grandchildren, how did it go?
Well, basically, we set up procedures. I had to do everything from scratch. There was no class schedule. There were no procedures. There was no nothing. I could not go to the filing cabinet and pull out the memo from a year ago and change the date. No, I had to create everything that was done. So when I say from scratch, that's what I mean, from scratch, everything. So I had some other Egyptian teachers also helping me. And in the middle of the year, I hired a biology teacher from Canada who finished the year and did the PE and the biology. So that was a help. So at the end of the year, we had 20 students, and they said, let's hire the teachers now that we need for the following year, which will now be grades K through 11 in one shot.
Went from grades 9, 10 to
K to 11. I said, well, how do we know how many teachers that we need? They said, just hire them. And see, they didn't worry about class size. They did not combine second and third grade, for example, with one teacher. They would not conceive how one teacher could teach both grade levels. So that's okay with me. I hired him. And of course, for kindergarten, my wife was with me, Laverne Yoder, who taught for many years in kindergarten here in Rockham County. And she walked into a room with 4 white walls and created an American kindergarten. And so we went from 20 students the first year to 120 the second year.
Spread out over 12
grades. Those grades, right.
How forbidding was your cultural adjustment?
Well, the cultural adjustment was such that, you know, how do you do it here? How do we think in the West? And does it mesh? Does it not mesh? And, of course, the textbook approval was one example. One had to adapt to the fact that in this cultural work, well, in Cairo particularly, the sense of time is very different. It's always later. And using the word inshallah, if God so wills. Now, that's an okay kind of statement until it is used as a cover or an excuse. So when I'd say to students, we will be having the exam next Tuesday, the students would go, inshallah. I says, no, it's a little bit more than inshallah. It will be on Tuesday. Because you see, otherwise, if I say we're going to meet at 10 o'clock and the other parties do not show up, they can just simply say, well, I made it, inshallah, when I could. You see, it's a nice excuse. But on the other hand, it's very meaningful in their religious context at the same time.
Yes, it has something, it seems to me, in it that we Americans could use.
Oh, yeah, we could use a lot. We could use a lot more of that awareness that not everything is going to depend upon ourselves.
How did you find your students? Did you have any marked frustrations or disappointments?
Oh, there probably were some of those all along the way. You soon learn as to what you can do or not do. For example, I thought when the students left a lot of paper scattered outside after the lunch hour that maybe the students should help pick up that paper. Of course, that's my Western way of thinking. They would say, no, let the maids, the nannies, pick that up. And so one day I had Big Omar, who was in problems with something else, and I thought, okay, and I would have Omar pick up this paper. Well, Omar's big and tall, taller than I am. He was not for one minute going to bend down and pick up the paper that was not his, see? And so that was the last time I used that approach.
Did you have discipline problems at all?
Well, students are students all over the world. I used to deal with students one-on-one on a discipline matter, but I soon learned that if I bring both offending parties into my office at the same time, they will start talking. And so right there in my office, they talk this thing out, and if they were in a fight or something, I just simply ask, well, how long shall this continue? Do we keep hitting until we see blood, until we see teeth? Are we going to have war or are we going to have peace? And usually, by the end of the session, they were ready to shake hands and walked arm in arm out of the office. That's how I did discipline in Cairo. It was different, firm, yet fair.
You talk about this with great equanimity. Did you feel that most of the time you were there? Did you ever go, what have I done?
Well, you do that all the time. It's like when I'm in Vietnam right now, I say to myself, how did I get here and what am I doing? And so it's always that kind of question. But you have to stay focused. And I do that as an administrator in education. I know where we need to go and what all the pieces that need to come together. And you can't do it without experienced teachers. And those are the only ones I hired. I did not hire people who were directly out of teacher education the last spring. And so with that kind of staff and faculty, we could go forward.
You brought up Vietnam, and I want to get to that in one second. But you were in Cairo until 2008.
That's right, 8 years.
And describe what the school was like when you left.
Okay, well, eventually we moved from the campus on the national school and built a whole new school complex that we occupied in 2006. This was probably $85 million worth of Egyptian pounds.
How was it funded?
Well, the owners took care of that. I never worried too much about finances. It seemed that Mr. Muhammad knew how to do that. And he had resources.
And his eight daughters.
And his eight daughters. And so Mr. Muhammad was all for this. And so we broke ground in 2005. And it was built in 10 months. And
wow.
We said many times, how could this be done? Three stories with a gymnasium, with a swimming pool, with a science labs, the art labs, all everything that you need in an American school. Well, my owner visited schools in the States. She wanted to know where she could go. And I sent her to some other friends I knew in New Jersey. So she came back and said, the hallways are wide. Our hallways must be wide. She wanted American furniture. She went to Texas and she got American furniture, 22 ship containers of stuff, including the bleachers for the gymnasium.
You know, one of my great talents as an interviewer is that I can laugh silently, so you're not treated to hearing me snorting away while I listen to you tell about this delightful adventure. It sounds delightful. Why the obsession with American? Was it just equated with good education?
Equated with good education and doing it differently. See, when you apply critical thinking, investigation, inquiry, problem solving, that's in stark contrast to just memorizing something for an exam. That's the big difference. Plus also the way you go about it, the way you provide for individual expression, the way you provide for recognition of progress. I had a young guy who worked the lamps for the drama production. And so he's doing the spotlights. And I said, Hussein, you're doing a really good job. Yeah, he says, I like this very much. And he happened to be one of the grandchildren of the owners. And I said to my owner, who was his aunt, I says, you know, Hussein is doing a great job. He is? Why, we never considered him in the family worth much of anything. So you see, give them a little bit of affirmation, and they blossom unbelievably.
I want to stay in Cairo. Just mm-hmm. You left it. What led you to leave it?
Well, after 8 years, my wife and I thought this is probably long enough, and okay. We thought we should get back to the children and the grandchildren here. And so we did. But then, of course, you know, the revolution came along later, only to discover that on the Time magazine cover of February 2011, you see five or seven, I forget, faces of Egyptian young people. And the lower left-hand corner is Sarah Abdel-Rahman, one of our students, who went on to the American University in Cairo in theater. She was caught up into the activities of the revolution. I had email exchange with her. I could never tell how many other students were also involved, but I'm sure they were in some way.
With that critical thinking.
Critical thinking.
Yes.
And believing in themselves and believing that it can be different and that if we do something, perhaps we'll see some results.
Is the school still going? Did it
It is still going. However, they did not hire as many Americans. We had as many as 40, 45 American teachers there, gets expensive in terms of flying them over, giving them housing, giving them health care, and all of that. So they opted for more Egyptian teachers, which means that the quality of that education is different because you cannot import Egyptian teachers non-trained into an American school and expect them to do it in the same manner. It won't work.
Well, you didn't manage to stay home long.
Well, I got this phone call in the middle of the night at 1 a.m. on Groundhog Day. And they said, this is the American school in Vietnam in Ho Chi Minh City. And the owner, Phil Nguyen, said they have just dismissed their head of school and they need somebody right away to come. Can I come? Well, what can you say? I knew something about the head of school.
You could say no.
I could have said no. I knew something about the head of school that was there because he had also been in Cairo. And I knew that if he was there, that things would go downhill fast. And they were simply moving in that way. So I thought I would help them out. They were only in the second year, 170 students from kindergarten through grade 10. And only in the second year, you can't have that kind of negative intrusion. And so I went over to Vietnam and tried to calm the waters and help to steer the ship forward, which I did. Then, of course, they said, won't you come for another year? And I said, yes. And behold, I'm going back now in July 34 this second year, hired some 15 new teachers coming in, 15 returning teachers. So I have a whole new mix, a new ball game, new set of dynamics, but still an American school, good people to work with, and Asian students now instead of Egyptian, and there's a difference.
That's what I was going to ask you. What is the difference?
The Asian students are going to be more respectful, more considerate, and more eager to learn. Egyptian students, yes, they wanted to learn, but they sure loved to have a lot of fun.
Would I be really rude? I would be, but I'm going to do it anyway. May I ask how old you are?
How old I am? Well, my mother said that I was born in 1940. So that gives me at least 70 years and 10, and a 2 on top of that.
You know, we get to be a certain age. I'm speaking as a woman of a certain age, as I often refer to myself. You can see your life writ on your face. You look to me to be someone who's been fully alive for those 70 years and 10 plus 2, and who has no interest in slowing down. Am I correct?
Well, when they called me in the night, I could sense it was another challenge. And I guess I arise to those challenges because I know education, I know educational leadership, I know how it can be done. And to have the kind of things happening where they were dismissing faculty here and there and just unsettling things all over the place, it doesn't have to be that way. And I know that. And I am determined enough to move in and correct the situation.
Up in the morning and out to school. The teacher is teaching the golden rule. American history and practical math. You study him hard, hoping to pay.
As to his family losing him overseas to yet another challenge, Dr. Lee Yoder says they understand that creating the new and designing something as it could be in the field of education are simply their father and grandfather's natural interests.